What place should the priority of God's call to pastoral church ministry be when the question is the wife's mind is, I don't know if I can go back into it again? Well, I think there needs to be a time that's appropriate for healing and for regrouping. I think you could do irreparable damage if the wife is not ready for another round and she's staggering around the ring, needing somebody to ring the bell for her and give her a break. And I don't know, there is such pressure, and I feel so strongly on the wife's importance in that coupleness and ministry place, that if time is needed to regroup and to heal, then it needs to be. Now, it could just be that the ministry you're going into is that place to heal. And it might be that if the man can talk to the board and say, look, I don't want any pressure put on my wife for the first year. I want her just to take her time and find her place and do what she wants to do. And you can have that good, healthy, healing situation. It could be the very best thing to go into a loving group of people that are going to do that. There are some churches that pride themselves on helping ministry couples. In fact, our son, our eldest son, is a pastor up in Michigan. And when he came out of seminary, he was called to this little church up there, and they pride themselves on taking young men straight out of seminary and giving them a launch, a good experience into the ministry. They count that as part of their ministry. What a wonderful thing when they're willing to take a young man and give him a great experience, nurture him, encourage him, listen to him, learn to preach, and bring him on, and then send him out into his ministry instead of chewing him up and spitting him out. Now, that would be the sort of group of people, if you could find it, that would be a great place to heal. But if it's going to be more trauma and more pressure, I would say take a break and give her a chance.
I think that's a good answer, and I would agree with that, basically. Just a couple of things in addition. Remember what we've just been talking about, the fact that sometimes there is a dying, that it is in our dying that the life of Christ is manifested, that sometimes it is in our hurting that the power of Christ is seen to its fullest effect. And so I would just say, I agree entirely with everything that Jill has said. I would just give a word of caution. Don't allow the fact that you've been emotionally scarred by a bad experience in a church to put you in a position of saying, never again, never again. Because there could be a very real sense in which you could go into another experience much richer and much more capable of handling it. But the word of caution, I would underline that Jill has said, and that is that you absolutely don't want to get into another situation where you're going to have a repeat performance. And I think there should be very real openness between the pastor and the church that is doing the calling. And if it's a denominational situation, I think it's imperative that those in the leadership of the denomination should be aware of the situation, and that they should be bringing their expertise to bear on the situation. There are too many casualties in ministry simply because those who have had a difficult experience are not being cared for and not being helped to get on their feet appropriately. We're very impressed with the denomination that our son is in. And Jill gave one example of that. And it was rather interesting. When he was about to graduate from seminary, the area director for the denomination got in touch with him and said, Dave, we're glad that you plan to be with us. And he said, let's look at placement for you. And Dave said, do you have any churches with vacancies? Oh, he said, yes. He said, in our area, we have 12. So Dave said, well, I guess we'll find one then. Oh, he said, I wouldn't even consider you for 9 of them. I said, why? He said, why? He said, because he said they would not look after you properly. He said, they need an old-timer in there. They need one who knows how to cope with that situation. That kind of caring is so important. And so I would encourage, if this is a personal question, I would encourage you, if you're in a denominational situation, to talk to the leadership openly and to try to find a situation that would be most suitable all round. All right. How do you handle the situation where you have people on the board who seem to receive a clear word from the Lord and others don't? Jill, would you like to?
Jill.
I think that the whole concept of a plurality of leadership is clearly biblical, and I think there's a very good reason for that, and that is that in our plurality of leadership we should be working to a consensus. And my experience is that it is possible for people to claim to have a word from the Lord, but when it is carefully evaluated by equally godly, equally caring people, that word from the Lord is suspect. And that in actual fact, they are simply using a cliche, a very dangerous cliche. On the other hand, I have had experiences on the boards where there's been a real visionary who's been at least 10 light years ahead of the rest of the board. And it's been rather obvious that the God of the cosmic plan is really talking to this fellow, and he's got some ideas of where we could go. Now, he can quickly blow the board apart or get fed up and quit. What you have to do, if you're working with the board, is to get them all to listen to each other. Give them all the time in the world they need. When we have a difficult situation, where there are going to be a variety of opinions, we have a very simple way of doing it. We will say on a certain time, after we've had time to study it and think about it and do papers on it and get various presentations on this thing, we will set a specific date, and all of you on the board will be required to give your carefully considered position on this. And they've all got to come with it ready, so that they're not just being persuaded by one persuasive person, or not just being dominated by one person, or just being herded along like a lot of unthinking sheep. And our experience is that that this takes away the idea of, you know, one person who has a word from the Lord and everybody else is just an also-ran. It means that all of them are put into the position of really praying and studying and thinking and listening and responding. And in this way, there's a much better chance of coming to consensus. But, you know, if you've got 12 people on your board, you're going to have at least 15 opinions to start off with. But then you can work it down and work it down until in the end you can get a sense of direction.
Let me say, from the women's point of view, this happens to us a lot. I've had women come up to me and say things like this: the Lord has told me that I am to be your best friend. And I think, Lord, why'd you tell her that? Or, more honestly, I don't think he's told you that. The women do say these sort of things constantly with great emphasis. And I think you just have to confront people if you have your big suspicions and say, how did he tell you that? How did he tell you that? Tell me. And usually that's all you need to find them waffling around somewhere and say, well, that would be lovely, we'll be friends, but then we have to be friends with everyone and, you know, whatever you want to do with it. But I think women, I've found women come out with greatly dogmatic statements of what the Lord has told them to do, that I usually just ask them how, where, when did this message come to you, and why do you think this is from the Lord? And I think if you come back and confront them gently, then they have to come up with something better than that. A question: how do you stay fair to your own children? Can they be sacrificed for other people's children? I was well aware that some of the things I was saying in my session were not filled out and balanced. And we didn't even talk about the children in pastoral concerns. So much to be said here. Obviously, we all know the situation where pastoral children have been sacrificed for other people's children. I honestly think they're minimal. You know, this big thing about these children of missionaries that get abused and whatnot, still 80 to 90% missionary children go back to the mission field. And yes, there are the 20%. But I want to know what went wrong. I want to know the dynamics between the husband and wife on the mission field. I want to know what sort of a marriage and relationship they have. I want to know what their communication's like. And which I do all the time, get into that, I often discover that if that particular couple and family had been at home in the United States in business, the man would probably have escaped into his job instead of into his ministry. And that there are lots of things that need addressing in that marriage. Now, that still leaves 1-2% where, yes, the children have been sacrificed on the altar of ministry. What happens then? That's clearly wrong. Proverbs 31 says the woman should be keeping an eye on her family. And I think from the woman's perspective, we're in a good place to do that. We're with the children more than the men, generally speaking. I remember Stuart saying to me, keep your eye on the children. Whenever they start to show abnormal signs of strain, not normal, abnormal. Normal is, yes, we miss Daddy. I remember Pete saying to me at the age of 4 or 5, where's Daddy going? He's going to America. What's he going to America for? Tell people about Jesus. All the standard answers coming out of my mouth. Haven't they all heard yet? He said. And then he said this, which was really hard to listen to. Why does it have to be my daddy? Why can't somebody else's daddy do a little bit of it so my daddy can stay home more? That was a little harder with a little child to cope with, because as a mother, often we're called to deal with the daddy space, as I call it. And how well we do that is how well we're doing ourselves, basically. And those children pick that up. If we're not doing very well, they'll pick it up. And whatever we say, isn't it wonderful, you know, we're in this ministry, if we're not feeling that, children do not create your attitude, they reveal it. And that's a shattering thing. And so if we are healthy and positive and enjoying our ministry role, they'll sense that and they'll pick it up. I found that when I was struggling, when I became bitter, the children picked it up. And then it would be, why does Daddy have to be there? Why can't it be somebody else's daddy? When I was doing well, the children were part of it and feeling very good about it. I don't believe in determinism, that if you do it all right, the child is going to turn all right out for Jesus. I don't believe in it because of the free will of the child. God had a son, and he put him in paradise, and he still went wrong. And you can do it all right, although I've never met parents that have, but you can do it all right. And the children still choose which way they're going to go. So I think it smacks of determinism to say you do it all right as Christian parents and your children have to follow Jesus and all end up in the ministry. I don't believe that's the ideal either. You know, we have to help the children find what God wants them to do, whether it be in the ministry or not in the ministry. So I think you keep your eye on your child and see what's happening, and when they show abnormal signs, as ours began to do in our situation, then you regroup. We moved 3,000 miles for our children when they began to show abnormal signs, and we chose another ministry position that would give us the teenager years together, more or less, with our children, certainly more than the less that we'd been enjoying before. So when you need to move, you move. You keep an eye on the kids and see how they're doing. That's probably, it's too big a subject to go on with.
We're in a situation where we're in a sort of a semi-isolated situation in the ministry that we're in. I know that my wife Leah feels that a great deal. You mentioned it was good for the wives to get together. That would be over, say, we're in a valley and there's a number of Lutheran churches and Baptist church and others. If those wives could get together regularly, that would be a good thing. Right. But also, what about us men? Mm-hmm. Even though we're busy working, we get very lonely, mm-hmm. and we need the fellowship. So I see in my eye there would be a need perhaps for the men mm-hmm. to get together too in an area. Mm-hmm. What was your view, please?
Well, I'll do the women and Stuart can say something about the guys. In the work I'm doing with that Ministry Wives newsletter, I'm working with the wife of the leader of NAE, National Association of Evangelicals in Washington, Lynn Dugan. And she was the one that did that survey over the ministry wives. She's come up with a little paper on how to start a ministry wives support group in your area. And remember, most of the churches we're working with are less than 100 people across America. So it's pretty typical and comparative to what we have here, I think, from what I've been told. And so she's come up with a how-to, as Americans are so good at doing this. How do I, as a lonely minister's wife, begin to find other lonely minister's wives? What can we do together? How often should we do it? How to instigate this? And it's a real good practical step-by-step thing. If you, that would be the best thing I could do would be to send you that particular how to start a ministry support wives group. I tried to do it when I first came to Wisconsin because, as I told you, I was desperate to figure out how to do this. And I did just go through the yellow pages in the city. I was in the city and write to 100 pastors' wives and invite them to my house. That's what you can do. I mean, if you're not in the city, just do it in your own area. And just put on a cup of tea and sit down and just tell them, look, I need some support and help. I need people on my own level. And if there's any of you here have these same needs, why don't we meet? And then decide at that meeting how often, twice a year, three times a year, once a month, whatever. Or even on the phone to ask for each other's prayer requests. All sorts of things you can do. And the best way to do is to find them, get them to your house, and just ask them. Or have a survey, put a survey ready. You know, asking all the questions that perhaps they're too shy or reticent to say out loud. And so there's lots of things you can do to find each other. And I ended up, 60 women came to the first session. They all dropped away as I tried to do something regularly. They were just too busy. I ended up with one friend who was really my salvation that first year. She was a Lutheran pastor's wife. And Grace and I became, and still are, 20 years later close, even though she's right up country now and was moved away from the city. I don't know what I would have done without her. I do not know. She was having a terrible time in her church as it happened. She says she doesn't know what she would have done without me. And if we couldn't meet physically, we were on the phone once a week to ask for each other's prayer requests and support. So there's lots of things that we can do if we'll be the instigator and facilitator of it.
All that applies as far as men are concerned as well, although there is one difference, and that is that women are much more inclined towards relational things than men are. Just to get men together to, quote, relate is a much more difficult task than getting women together to relate to each other. But if you can give men a good reason for getting together and give them an objective in terms of perhaps a project or something like that, we have found, for instance, that we can get men together, not necessarily pastors, but we can get men together on a Saturday morning. We have a specific time for starting, a specific time for finishing. They know exactly how long the talk is going to be. They know exactly how long the table talk is going to be. It is organized so that it's printed up for them, and they come in and they do it, and it's over and they go. And women are much more relational. Men are much more objective oriented. So you can do the similar thing there, but you'd have to have that different approach.